Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
For the New Orleans Saints, who entered this game as the overall favorite to win the Super Bowl, couple of glaring flaws that I think could be issues. One is there was not a lot of time for Drew Brees to throw the football. That offensive line got beaten up by the Dallas Cowboy defensive line. The other thing was it did not appear to me that the New Orleans Saints receivers were creating any space at all against the Dallas Cowboy secondary. That's a little bit ominous. That's one of the moves they made when they went and got Dez Bryant. Other than Michael Thomas, Drew Brees is throwing to a lot of guys who are very unaccomplished. And so if you watch this game, the windows that Drew Brees had to throw, there were not the wide open receivers that we've gotten used to. Down the stretch of the season, do the Saints have enough receivers with game-breaking ability who can create space? Michael Thomas has been phenomenal, but if somebody has a lockdown secondary and can get some pressure on the quarterback, maybe this Saints offense, which right now coming into this game was the third best offense in the history of the NFL, averaging over 37 points per game, maybe it's possible that the Saints are not the juggernaut that we necessarily thought they were coming into this game.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Unlike a lot of people, I don't believe you can overreact to individual NFL or college football games because they represent only one opportunity for you to review your favorite team in the NFL, potentially for only 16 different games, in college football, potentially for only 12. And so every different window that you see is a substantial portion of an overall portrait that ultimately will reveal itself to you. So yes, it's possible to overreact to one game, but you shouldn't be uncomfortable with looking at every 60-minute window and saying, what did this particular section of an overall portrait reveal about the team? To me, the Saints' loss is not as troubling as it might be to some Saints fans who are really upset about falling behind for the moment from the Rams in a playoff setting in the event that you get to the NFC Championship game. And let me explain why I don't think it matters that much in the larger universe right now. First of all, the Saints did not play well. The Saints had virtually everything go wrong for them on the offensive side of the ball. Drew Brees played his worst game of the season, and they lost by 3 points on the road in a game that the Dallas Cowboys were treating as their Super Bowl. That's actually what I would expect to happen for a Super Bowl champion. The Dallas Cowboy offense had very limited success against the New Orleans Saints defense, and the Saints defense gave their offense time after time opportunities to win that game last night. So if I am a Saints fan and I am sitting looking at this game the next morning in retrospect, I'm saying, you know what? It's a tough game to lose, but everything went against us. We were on the road in a Thursday night setting, which tends to favor the home team. The Dallas Cowboys, Jason Garrett, everybody on that team basically were treating us as a Super Bowl environment. And we answered the bell to such an extent that even though we fell behind initially and didn't score in the first half, we had the ball multiple times in the second half with a chance to win that football game. And so as a result, I look at the rest of the New Orleans Saints schedule and I say, okay, let's look at the larger universe of the NFL right now. Let's say the worst case scenario system happens in this kind of situation. And we are looking at the overall playoff picture and how many teams in the NFC do we really feel nervous about losing to? And then on top of that, you look right now, there's a pretty substantial gap between the Rams and the Saints and everybody else. The third team right now in the NFC is the Chicago Bears, and they're 8-3. And New Orleans is now sitting at 10-2, but you look at their final four and you say, okay, we're going on the road against the Bucs next. The Saints should win that game. I know they lost to the Bucs in week one. That makes me even more confident that the Saints are going to beat the Bucs. All right. Then you've got the Saints on the road against the Panthers. Maybe that's a losable game, but I also feel like the Saints should win that game. Then the Steelers come to town. That's going to be a massive game. Steelers got a tough closing schedule. And then the Panthers come to town. I think it's likely that worst case scenario, the Saints go 3-1. Do I feel like the Chicago Bears are going to run the table? No. So that means that the Saints would still get a bye and they would still get home field for all but one game, assuming the Rams won out. Okay? Then the next step becomes, if you are the Saints, where is the game we'd have to go on the road for? Would it change in some way what we do? Now, I'd rather play in a dome. I'd rather play indoor. I'd rather play on our fast track in New Orleans where our fans are crazy and zany and wild, and we know how much they can make a difference for us. But if we have to play on the road, is it really that bad to have to go to LA? It's likely to be dry. It's likely to be relatively warm. You're likely to be playing against a team that you know you've already beat that isn't a defensive juggernaut. Does it really matter in the grand scheme of things a ton if I'm a Saints fan, if worst case scenario, we end up with the 2 seed now and we have to go on the road and win in LA? I just don't know that that's anywhere near the equivalent of, oh, we got to go on the road in Pittsburgh. Oh, we got to go on the road in Foxborough. Oh, we got to go on the road in Kansas City, even though the Chiefs fans, you haven't won a home playoff game since 1993. The road and the environment, the weather, could be a massive impact in a Kansas City, in a Pittsburgh, or in a Foxborough in New England. Now, if you end up having to go on the road in Chicago, that could be significant, but I just don't see the Bears as running the table in their final five. Because the Bears play against the Giants. Okay, you can feel pretty good about that game probably. But then the Bears have the Rams, they've got the Packers, and they got the Vikings. I just don't see there's any way that the Bears are going to finish 13-3. I don't see any way that the Saints finish worse than 13-3. So I think the worst case scenario now, as you wake up this morning coming out of this defeat, if you're a Saints fan, is we're going to be the 2 seed. Worst case scenario, and we still have a decent chance to run the table and be the 1 seed. So I don't think this is a cataclysmic loss for the Saints by any stretch of the imagination. Now the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas has taken a stranglehold to some extent in this division. They're 5-1 at home. That's a big deal because if you win the division, you get to play a home playoff game. And if you're doing the standings right now and kind of thinking about what the playoffs might look like, you would in theory have the Dallas Cowboys as the 4 seed. If the season ended today, the Minnesota Vikings would be coming on the road against the Dallas Cowboys. I like the Vikings in that game. I think the Vikings are better than the Cowboys, but the Cowboys are 5-1 at home, and so you'd have to be cautiously optimistic if you're a Cowboy fan. Reason why I bring that up. I think there's an argument to be made that the Dallas Cowboys right now are eerily similar to the run that the Jacksonville Jaguars got on last year. What happened? The defense came alive and became a real force. And a quarterback that people weren't 100% sure about rode the tidal wave of that defensive performance to a massive contract extension. Then what happened this year? The wheels came off. The Jacksonville Jaguars basically have had to acknowledge to everyone that they paid way too much money to Blake Bortles. The $50-plus million contract they gave him was a reaction to the defense getting hot and Blake Bortles not being a total screw-up. Could the same situation be playing out with Dak Prescott in Dallas? Maybe. Or maybe this is different because maybe all Dak needed was Amari Cooper and the trade that Jerry Jones made that he got ripped for when he went and gave up a first-round pick for Amari Cooper. Maybe that fundamentally changed Dak Prescott's trajectory this year, because you can certainly point to his performance since they added Amari Cooper. The Dallas Cowboys are now 4-1. They were 3-4 before Amari Cooper got there. They're 4-1 since he got there. Maybe the argument is now Dak's got a weapon at receiver that opened up the rest of the run game for Ezekiel Elliott, and that fundamentally altered the trajectory of the Dallas Cowboys season. One of the fun things about watching NFL games is trying to discern exactly what we're learning about each individual team as the season plays out.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We're joined now by Missouri head football coach Barry Odom. Tigers finish 8-4, top 25 season, 4-4 in the SEC, big win over the Florida Gators, and they played against both Georgia and Alabama, and I'll have Coach Odom break that down. But I'm curious for you now, Coach, as you sit around and wait, first of all, thanks for joining us. Secondly, did you watch any of that game last night between the Cowboys and the Saints, or what are you doing now that the season's over as you wait for the bowl season and where you're going to be going?
Yeah, what's up, Clay? Man, good to be on with you guys this morning. The big decision I've got, I'm trying to decide if I'm going to go purchase the hardback cover of your book, or if I want to go 9 hours of listening to your voice on the audio book. So that's a tough decision I'm trying to decide right now. I'm actually in Dallas on the road recruiting, so was in Dallas last night. Didn't get a chance to attend the game. Had a couple of home visits recruiting wise, and then headed back to campus today. We'll have a practice tomorrow. Obviously we'll find out Sunday our bowl opponent, and then we've got official visits. So it's a busy time with the moving of signing date. The third Wednesday now in December, the early signing date. That's kind of sped everything up with our calendar. So as soon as our game was over, we beat Arkansas the day after Thanksgiving on Friday, and then we hit the road recruiting, and kind of been nonstop since then.
How much would you like to be able to go back and play some of the games? Your team seems like it hits its stride, and certainly hit its stride in November this year with a lot of big kind of dominant wins down the stretch to finish the year. How much would you like to go back and be able to replay some of the games that you lost earlier in the year now?
Well, I think really you get about what you earn, and we weren't playing complete enough ball early on in the year to win some close games. We lost to number one at the time, Bama, number two at the time, Georgia, and then we lost on the last play of the game to Kentucky and the last play to South Carolina. So we're really close to breaking down another wall there. I think before all said and done through the month of November, we're playing as good a ball as we have, and that's a reason we're practicing this weekend, because I'm trying to continue to capture that, because we are playing our best ball. The momentum that we have, the way that we're playing together on both sides of the ball, really complementing each other, and excited about getting into another bowl game and finding out where we're going to be.
You got Drew Locke at quarterback. I know he hasn't officially decided what he's going to do going forward, but he seems like he's going to be an NFL quarterback one day. You've watched a lot of guys. You played a lot of defense over the years. How good can Drew Locke be both at the bowl game but also at the next level in the NFL in your mind?
Just like our team, I think Drew is playing his best football, and he's playing smarter than he ever has, and I think it's because of what he's understood on the training, the football IQ part of it, and the understanding of not trying to force every throw, throw the check down, live to play the next snap, and he's led our team this year. He's got the physical tools that's off the charts, and I think the thing that he's done most since the end of the year last year until today is put himself in position, understanding the game and playing smart football. He's had every team, in the league through our watching practices the last couple months, and you get in conversations with kind of what they're thinking. He's gonna be a really high draft pick, and I think he's gonna play ball for a long time.
When you look at your team, the biggest win that you guys had all season, and it seems like a moment that kind of crystallized how good you could be, was the win you got on the road against the Florida Gators. You guys went into the swamp and really took it to Florida. What did it feel like in that locker room after that game?
Well, we had just lost to Kentucky the week before, you know, on the last play of the game. So had some, you know, some tough moments there early in the week on getting past that. And I thought our guys responded really in great fashion on using it, fuel of motivation, so to speak. And then we prepared really well that week, knew that we would have opportunities if we just went and played our game. And our guys went out and started really fast. Momentum, you know, got on our sideline early on, and we kept it, and we played about as efficient on both sides of the ball. And then after the game, you know, the reward for being that close, and we talked about it openly after the Kentucky game. You know, guys, we're going to be in this situation again. You know, it's going to be crunch time late in the fourth quarter, because I knew we were just good enough as a team that we were going to be in every game as long as we didn't go out there and turn the ball over. We didn't give up explosive plays on defense. You know, we're in a position that I knew we were going to be in the game if we just go play the way that we can. We did, executed, made some plays. I mean, we had guys step up and make plays through the course of that game. But it was fun seeing them celebrate and understanding that was a big win for us at the time.
We're talking to Missouri head football coach Barry Odom. How many times, you mentioned that Kentucky game and the way it ended, how many times did you watch the pass interference call in super slow-mo? How many different versions did you watch it from? I mean, as a coach, as a fan sitting down and watching that game on television, I had a reaction. As a coach, I'm sure you did. Then you go back and you watch the film. To have a game come down to a call like that, what did you think? And now that the season's over, you go back. I mean, how frustrating was that?
Well, you know, I've watched it, you know, I would say hundreds and hundreds of times, if not more than that, because the thing that I wanted to make sure that however we were teaching the coverage technique with our defensive back, you know, what did we do wrong? How can I coach it better? How can I put my kids in a position to go make the play when that situation arises again? And, you know, I wouldn't change the technique he played with. But we played it as the way that I'm coaching it and that we're coaching it. He played it just like he was supposed to. So you look at, you know, for us, when we're building this like we are, you know, the margin of error is very, very slim, very minimal. And you understand that there's over the course of a game, you know, every play matters, every yard, every inch, every possession, all that stuff. But there's going to be a select 12 to 14 to 16 plays that really, really determine the outcome of the game. And, you know, in the balance there, we made some plays down the stretch to give us a chance, and then they did as well. So you learn from it, you use that experience moving forward for when you get into that position again, that, you know, the mindset goes from here we go, here we go again. It's a mindset of putting yourself in position, the mental repetitions that you're going to take through it and go through it, and understand that they're trained for it. You're ready to go and step up in crunch time and make a play.
We're talking to Missouri head football coach Barry Odom. You had to make a decision in the offseason to replace Josh Heupel, who went to UCF. They obviously haven't lost a game with him as the head coach there. You had to bring in Derek Dooley as an offensive coordinator. You took some criticism for that in the offseason. How did you think it went?
Well, you look at what I wanted, you know, after met with Derek a number of times and understood what he was going to be able to bring to the table, not only offensively, but with our program. He's done, you know, he's been a guy that I've leaned on some things. He's made our program better, and he's done an outstanding job coaching our offense and leading that side of the ball. If you look statistically on what we've done offensively this year, we're a much better football team, more complete, able to run the ball, much more efficient on third downs, taking care of the ball. And, you know, we're a better team, and a large part because we're playing so well on offense. So the thing I wanted to make sure that in-house that we shielded ourselves some from that criticism and just make sure that we took care of what we knew we had in our locker room. And Derek's done that. And I wanted him to be judged on, you know, the 12 Saturdays on the production they put on the field. And I think he's done a heck of a job.
We're talking to Barry Odom, Missouri football coach. You mentioned early in this conversation that you coached against Alabama and Georgia. They play tomorrow in the SEC title game. There's only one other coach in America, I think Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, who has coached against both of those teams in the same year so far. How would you break down those two teams? What do you expect to see between Alabama and Georgia tomorrow in Atlanta?
Well, we played them both, you know, decently early in the season. Georgia, I think, was game four for us, and then Bama was game six. The thing that in our conference and league, it's a line of scrimmage league, and you know, I think it's always going to be that way. And you look at the way that both of those programs are built, and you just start with the line of scrimmage on both sides. That's going to be such a unique matchup. I think that there's going to be really some. I think this will be a tremendous game. I think this will be some tremendous one-on-one battles that will be interesting to watch. I think the way that both teams are built similarly. That the thing that Alabama has done with the play of their quarterback and the skill that they've got on the outside, they're really stretching the field vertically. They're explosive, but also we look at what Georgia is able to do defensively. I think it's going to be, Clay, I think it's going to be a lot closer than everybody thinks. They're both tremendous teams.
How good is Tua? You've seen Nick Saban defensively. You're a defensive guy. You come on from the defensive side of the ball. Nick Saban offensively has not necessarily been dynamic over the years. How much more difficult is he to cover given his talents, and how would you assess him overall from a defensive standpoint trying to match up against him?
Well, he stretches every inch of the field, and he's playing smart football. The touch that he has on the ball, you watch it on video, and you're impressed with it, and then you get in person, and it's even more impressive. He's got a calmness about him. He understands what they're trying to do with the play call, and then he's so gifted that he can get out of trouble. He can buy time. He can run and get yards. And then his vision down the field is something that when I walked away from the game, he's playing as good as anybody in the country.
You said you're on the road recruiting right now. You finished your third year at Missouri. What is the response that you're getting from recruits? And I know you've gotten some interest because you guys have had a good season. You've gotten interest from other jobs. How would you kind of assess the overall status of the program right now and your future there?
Well, we're winning in our conference, and we ended up with a 500 record this year. We understand what we have coming back. A lot of returning starters on both sides of the ball. We've recruited, our staff has recruited really well. We've played a lot of freshmen. I think we played 13 true freshmen last year. We played 15 this year. We're young in most spots, and we were losing our quarterback and a receiver and our right tackle offensively, and on the defensive side, losing three or four guys. But we've played a number of guys. We've got a really solid foundation coming back. We're going to be in position with another recruiting class to get our depth closer to where it needs to be, to be able to go compete in this league. And I'm excited about the things we've got going. And I think the opportunity that once we get guys on campus, they get around me and get around our staff, and they want to be a part of it. And so I'm excited about what we're going to do. Look forward to getting into a bowl game and all the preparation that you get with your team leading into that point. And then we'll get into the offseason and start over in the building process.
Coach, appreciate you getting up early with us. Good luck with that early recruiting period. Hope you enjoy the book. My wife says 9 hours of audio is too much for me, but everybody hears 15 hours every week on the radio, so maybe that's enough too.
I hear you, man. Thanks. Y'all have a great one.
You too. That's Coach Barry Odom at Coach_Odom, O-D-O-M, if you want to go find him on Twitter.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We're joined now by, I was about to say ESPN's Darren Revell, but today is the last day. How excited are you for the new gig, and how did you end up there? First, thanks for coming on, Darren.
Yeah, thanks, Clay. I'm very excited. I've had a great run at ESPN. It's totaled about 12 and a half years. I think both times that I was there in my young career, and coming back after CNBC, it was the right time for me to be there. It was kind of the right time for me to go to the Action Network, kind of go to the niche of the niche. It's been an interesting career for me, because when you think about covering the business of sports and starting that in 2000 and people thinking that wasn't big enough to cover, and then realizing I could do that every day to 18 years later, understanding that I could actually cover the business of gambling every day. It's pretty amazing to see how far, you know, you can come. And yeah, it just goes to speak to the business of niches in general. I mean, everyone always goes to Under Armour and, you know, how they came to the moisture wicking shirt and how they built their whole business around that. But, you know, I think that's kind of where we're at today, that people are comfortable with someone who's good in, or companies that are good in particular spaces, and they can grow to big businesses. And so that's what kind of gave me the confidence with the fact that we were the legalization of sports gambling in states, having the ability to decide whether they want to legalize it or not, that this is big enough to cover on a full-time basis.
There are now 8 states that allow sports gambling legally within their borders. There are going to be many more. My prediction is ultimately it's going to be like the lottery, where I think 44 of the 50 states now allow you to buy a lottery ticket. Over the next 5 to 10 years, I think virtually every state in the union is going to allow sports gambling. You're making a big bet on sports gambling yourself. How transformative do you believe sports gambling is going to be for sports fans and also the sports business industry?
Well, I live in New Jersey right now, which Pennsylvania will be the state that will beat out New Jersey, but them together by 2022 will beat out Nevada. But just looking in this state and being in this state by luck, and seeing what it looks like, and being in Europe and seeing what that looks like, it's pretty unreal to see what at least a fully mature state looks like. You know, we don't know what a fully mature U.S. looks like, but what a state looks like. And I'm talking about an old institution like a train, you know, like New Jersey Transit. I'd love to be the guy who sells sponsorship for New Jersey Transit. I mean, the guy hasn't gotten a call in like 7 years, you know, and he makes commission. And then all of a sudden, like DraftKings and FanDuel and William Hill and Caesars and 888, and all of them say, oh, my God, this is perfect. There's no betting in New York, and there's betting in New Jersey, and the trains are going from New York to New Jersey and back and forth. This is perfect. And I swear to God, the train has FanDuel on the outside of it, William Hill on the sides inside the train, and someone else on the floor and the ceiling. That's just the perfect example of how nuts it is. And, you know, here in New Jersey, there are currently 8 mobile apps that one can bet from. So to see the maturity, and by the end of so betting here started on June 14th, and by the end of this year, we're talking about $700 million will be the total handle. So I mean that's incredible. That's amazing.
All right, interesting question here, because a lot of people hear ESPN, or they hear Fox, or they hear CBS, or they hear NBC, and they think, oh, those big companies are going to be the leaders in the sports gambling space. You don't necessarily, obviously, feel that way. What advantages does the Action Network have that a company like ESPN maybe does not have that would lead you to leave ESPN for the Action Network?
Okay, that's the perfect question. So they just do gambling, right? And the way, when the Washington Post asked me that question, the way I basically answered it was, you know, if you're an investor in stocks, you want to turn on CNBC. And you want to turn on CNBC because that's what they do. Whether you're a sophisticated investor or not, you convince yourself that they are expert in that. That's the only thing they do. That's all they think about. That's all they talk about. ESPN has Doug Kazarian, has David Purdom, who is unreal, who I'm now going to have to compete with, and the chalk section which Chad Millman, who is now my boss at the Action Network, built is pretty formidable. But
when you look at the Action Network and you look at what they offer, what they offer for free and what they offer for pay, it clearly, how they were founded, three stat companies rolled into one, it clearly makes the better better at betting than any other organization out there. Now, here's the thing that really what made me comfortable going there. They don't take bets, which was important to me because I still want to be a journalist and I don't want to be guided by hey, you know, do this because, you know, we're going to make more money on it. So that's one. Two, it really is more of a site about data over tout, over these are my picks. And so that's what really makes the Action Network better and kind of has a greater strength than anyone else out there. If you go, you can see the strength of the data, how it was built, and how it makes the gambler more comfortable with what they're about to bet. So that's really where I felt like we have this influx of sports gambling. People are going to want to invest in the back end of, hey, I'm not going to just, you know, read articles. I'm going to want to do a little bit more. And if they do a little bit more, they're going to want to go to the best in the business. And I think and I have confidence that the Action Network is the best.
We're talking to Darren Revelle, formerly of ESPN, now of the Action Network. How hard of a decision was it to make?
It was not a hard decision in the sense that I, over the last 3 months, have been in New Jersey. I think it would have been a very hard I would not have gone to the Action Network. My boss, Chad Millman, went from ESPN to the Action Network 5 months before PASPA was repealed, before sports gambling, before the states could decide whether they want sports gambling or not. I would not have made the same decision because I feel like I probably couldn't have risked something like that without sports gambling being a definite in this country. But after mid-May, when it was done, and having seen my sports gambling stories go from, let's say, 20 in 2014 to 40 in 2015 to 60 in 2016. I mean, I'm probably going to do 100 this year. Plus living in New Jersey and seeing it in front of my face, having gone to Monmouth Park, having gone to the Meadowlands, having seen my friends, having seen what they've done on their apps, having seen the shift from daily fantasy to betting, as we've talked about, it made it a lot easier because I had this microcosm in New Jersey, knowing that it wasn't like we know this is coming. We know this is coming. I don't know if it's 44 like you say, but I can tell you I'm sure it'll be 15 by the end of 2019. And I'm sure it'll be 20 by the end of 2020. And so just figuring that out, there's going to be little details here and there. Sometimes states will think that the geofencing, the idea when you cross a state and if one state has it and one state doesn't, maybe that'll be too much, or they'll be worried about the licensing, or maybe one state won't make as much money as they thought and they won't do mobile and they'll only do brick and mortar. So some of the numbers and the projections will go down. But for the most part, this is happening. And I consider myself a business journalist who happens to cover sports. And the three hottest businesses right now are blockchain, cannabis, and sports betting. And I think the surest bet of those three is sports betting.
What's been the reaction on social media to your decision to leave ESPN and go to Action Network?
I know, like you, I'm a polarizing figure. I was
surprised as to how much talk it generated. And I think some of it has, I think a lot of it has to do with the move was another step for sports gambling. I think some of it was, you know, the show that you guys do. But you were like, you were ready. You've been all in on sports gambling for 5 years talking.
That's
about
exactly,
it.
So, that's like, exactly right. I saw this coming, and I said, this is going to be massive, and I am hopping on the sports gambling train. I was in the Supreme
Long
Court for when
ago.
The argument was made. Yeah, and you, to your credit, see the business opportunity here, too. I think the smarter people in our industry are starting to get on the train and realize how transformative this is going to be.
Right, but this is still in the
infancy,
very, very early stages. But the fact that I'm getting on the train and basically saying, I'll still do sports business, but I'm going to do mostly sports gambling, I think took people aback a little bit and said, whoa, wow. And I think it allowed some people, I mean, I know that the press kind of used it as a, wow, sports gambling, this is real. So I was surprised at the amount of coverage it got, but I think a lot of it really was, this was another signpost that sports gambling is very real.
Darren Revelle, I'm excited you can now come on the show. I'm excited to have you on in the weeks and months ahead. Congratulations on the move, and look forward to seeing how things go for you at the Action Network, my man.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Darren Revelle. Go follow him on Twitter, at Darren Revelle.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's cue the music, boys. I have got 8 gambling picks for you. We've been winning at a high rate all season long. If you've just written down these picks and played them, you've made a lot of money this season. All I ask is that you be kind to me, Santa Clay, and respect the picks. All right, are you ready? Let's cue the music, boys.
Guess who's back?
It's time.
A.K.A. Mr. Make It Rain on the Moon.
For Clay Travis to make us rich.
I'm rich!
Including the legendary, famous, well-known talk of the town, most celebrated.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Blood Bank Guarantee.
Utah. Tonight against Washington is the play. Utah, the Utes, Kyle Whittingham, they get it done. They cover the +5 or +5.5 in the Pac-12 title game. That's tonight. It's happening tonight, Friday night. MTSU, they won 27-3 last week against UAB. They're playing UAB again. You know what's going to happen? They're going to win again. They're a one-point favorite in the Conference USA title game. Memphis, +3.5, and I love the over in this game. Both these teams are going to run the football a lot. Neither one has a defense to stop the run. I like Memphis, actually, to win this game outright, and I like the over. I think Memphis is going to break the UCF winning streak. Northwestern at Ohio State. You heard us talking with Joel Klatt earlier. I like Northwestern +14.5 against Ohio State. Texas and Oklahoma, tap the veins, boys and girls. The Blood Bank Guarantee, Texas, Oklahoma, the over is going to hit. The over is going to hit. Put every spare dollar you have on the over in this one. Georgia +13 versus Alabama, and Clemson, Pittsburgh, the over 52 in this one. That is 8 winners. They're also up on outkick.com. If you're on your way to work and you're not able to write them down,